Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
This hour is being brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
If you missed the first hour of the show, I'm sorry. If you're listening on the podcast right now, I would say to you, make sure you go back and listen to the Roger Bennett interview. But this next hour of the show is going to be just as fabulous. Why? Because Bears training camp has started, and we are going to spend some time talking about the Bears with two guys who work on this show, helping us understand Bears football better. Big Ant Heron has made his way to the studio, which I was not expecting. So I'm very happy to see you because I feel like I haven't seen you like in person for forever. So that's a good thing. And Dan Durkin is on the phone with us. So I thought that I'd have, since I got the two big Bears brains here on the show, I figured I would ask them some questions. And Dan Durkin joins me on the Score Hotline, which is presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Gentlemen, first of all, thank you for being here. Big Ant, is really good to see you. Dan, thank you. I know that your schedule is crazy busy, and I appreciate you being available for us. So I'm going to give you the first question. I know that you've done the breakdown. You've been looking at the tape of Justin Fields. What's got you excited about what he can be?
Whew, thanks for having me. First off, a little Raider pride here with me and Big Ant. But yes, I think what has me most excited, Lawrence, is just he possesses all of the traits that you need physically to be exceptional at the position. And then every time you hear a coach, a trainer, a teammate talk about him, they reference alpha, he's got leadership qualities, all of those things. So then he has like the intangible side of it as well. And then you turn on the tape and the productivity is just right there for you, be it with his legs or his arms. I mean, he to me is one of the rare high ceiling, high floor prospects at the position. I think at his worst, he would probably be a maybe fringe top 12, 13 quarterback in the league with the potential to be a true superstar. So when you look at him and just evaluate him outside of just being a phenomenal physical specimen, his arm talent, his ability to throw the ball accurately, but his ball placement stands out a lot to me. And I know that receivers really appreciate a quarterback who can talk to him by how he's throwing the ball. Throw me away from a defender. Don't throw me into a defender. And you see that a lot. Ball's on the upfield shoulder. It's at their face. So there's so much to work with. And the quote that I got from Ryan Day was so good from that Move the Sticks podcast, where he basically said, look, there's nothing more you can ask for in a prospect. And he put it on his coaches. Can we coach? And so I think it's just the same situation for Nagy and his staff here in Chicago. You cannot possibly ask for a better prospect physically than you have right now. Somebody who's in tune mentally with himself, playing with humility, and then just what he does out there on the field, it's on the coaches now to make this work. So I think that all of Chicago should be incredibly excited about Justin Fields and what he brings to the table.
Right in line with what Dan's talking about there, and getting to cover Justin Fields over the couple of seasons that he was in Columbus with the Buckeyes, just in all my Big Ten coverage, what stands out to me, and it's going to be hard for a lot of us because it's the same regime in place that we watched try and develop Mitchell Trubisky in comparing how the development track of Justin Fields relates to that. And I believe that he's the type of prospect that has at least the best potential to overcome some of the shortcomings that I saw, that I know I talked to you about a lot. I know Dan talked to you about a lot. And, you know, yes, Mitch underperformed in a lot of ways, but Mitch was utilized inadequately in a lot of ways as well, schematically. And Justin Fields, I believe, you know, the hope is that they've learned from what they didn't do properly with Mitch. But even if they hadn't, I believe Justin Fields has the best potential, aside from maybe a Trevor Lawrence, who could come into this situation and outperform what some of those shortcomings were schematically, developmentally, and how they did things. And I believe that not just the tangible, which is you know, exponentially impressive, but the intangibles that Dan kind of briefly referenced there as well. He's an adult. You know, you draft a guy in the first round as a QB with the potential to start early. I mean, you know, if he were even higher, maybe you would view him as a definitive day one starter. But he's got that potential, not only with his aptitude, but just with his demeanor, with his command of the big stage, which he has referenced and been willing to share with the Chicago media. So I think he's ready for all those things, while at the same time, the Bears put themselves in a position where they don't need to feel like they have to force that issue. Because I believe that Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy are in a bit of an odd situation here, where I don't think drafting Justin Fields guarantees them additional years. So at least, frankly, I don't think it should. So I do believe that because of how long Ryan Pace has been in his position, and frankly, how long Matt Nagy has been the coach with this ball club, and the age of the Bears defense, you know, perhaps some certain guys aging out of their prime right now, they don't have the opportunity like the Bears likely had when they first drafted Mitch to say, yeah, let's give it a couple of years and go through this rebuild thing. This isn't a ball club that can or should look at this, at Justin Fields as QB, as a rebuild. So if it's Andy Dalton early in the season that gives them the best shot at winning, that's the way they have to look at it. Trevor Lawrence is in a position where it doesn't matter what happens in Jacksonville from a WL perspective this year. The Bears need to win games.
Well, let me stay with that, because I think it's one of the most interesting things about how this camp is going to go. And Big Ann, I'm going to start with you on this. How could Justin Fields impress upon the coaches that he is ready to take over? I'm okay with them saying Dalton is a starter. I'm totally okay with that, as long as they leave a door open to be wowed by Justin Fields. So how could one, with the two reps, do that and convince the coaches that he should be on the field?
His command of, you know, to say command of everything on the field is going to be asking a lot for a quarterback who just came in, but to not look overwhelmed by anything that's happening pre-snap, and to show that he at least has an understanding post-snap of where things should go, and that the processing of that, until you get those live reps, that the processing of it will come quicker and quicker. But because of the arm talent that Fields has, and because of the physical ability, the mobility he brings to the table, perhaps if he's not processing the post-snap as quickly, like the anticipatory sort of way that Andy Dalton can operate, that Ryan Pace is talking about impressing him so far, you know, frankly, going and watching training camp in person, yeah, I mean, Nick Foles in a practice looks like he's processing things with anticipation. Then you get in the live game reps, and that doesn't show itself. So even if Fields isn't immediately anticipating throwing windows and anticipating route combinations and coverages rolling in the way that you would necessarily want from a veteran, but at least if he doesn't seem confused and overwhelmed, once he gets to that point, then there's just that sliding scale of how well is Andy Dalton performing versus what we think the potential of this offense can be. Can Justin Fields protect himself mentally? And does he seem like he really knows what's going on physically? And once you get to that point, then obviously, you know, the ceiling of the offense is going to be much higher with Fields in there, but you don't want to necessarily put him out there in a position where he's not able to, not just physically and running away from guys, but be able to mentally protect himself. And I think the coach is seeing that and witnessing that, especially pre-snap, but even the post-snap end of just knowing where he should go with the ball. If he's like a little bit late, but you can tell he saw it, then I think that's going to be sort of the sliding scale for them to base things off of.
Dan, what are the Bears getting in Andy Dalton so that we have an understanding of the floor of Andy Dalton? Because I know that people are excited about Justin Fields, and they should be, but I agree with Big Ant that there are some wins that need to happen for this team. Can Andy Dalton be good enough to get them those wins?
I think he can. And I think that the reason that I feel that way is, you know, he had a rough stretch in Cincinnati with Ken Zampezi as the offensive coordinator. Like the 2015-2016 stretch for Dalton started to bottom out a little bit. And the person that came in and stabilized things for him was Bill Lazor. And what they did was just they simplified things. And I think that the level of decisiveness you saw from Andy Dalton as a quarterback under Bill Lazor and the plays that he had called for him, there was a difference. He was getting rid of the ball quicker. He was getting the ball into the hands of the right people on time. He kept the offense on schedule, and he was able to, you know, piece drives together. And, you know, I think that that to me is what you'd hope for in somebody like Andy, that to kind of, you know, couch on some of the comments that Big Ant made was, having command of the offense. You know, these decisions are made in like a hundredth of a second. It's not even like a second or split second. So any false step, any misread, any I saw something but it really wasn't there type thing, that's the consequence of a play either working out or not working out, and all of that stuff matters. So I think that what you're going to get in Dalton is somebody who can come up to the line of scrimmage, understand what he sees. But last year in Dallas, I saw him regress a little bit post-snap. And I think that he got tricked and he got fooled a little bit. And so you wouldn't expect that for a quarterback that has played as many snaps as him. But again, if they can keep it simple, a play-action-based scheme, he runs RPO well, which is different than play-action. But what I'm saying here is these quicker decisions where you can basically make the defense be wrong and then get the ball to the right spot on the field based on what you're reading, I think is what Andy Dalton can do. And I do agree, he can hold the offense over until it's ready to be handed over to Justin Fields. And I really think that he really needs to, this training camp, develop a bond with Allen Robinson like he had with A.J. Green in Cincinnati. Because one thing about Dalton, he was not afraid to force feed the ball to A.J. Green in those situations because he trusted him as a playmaker. They knew that they were seeing coverage unfold the same way. They knew the adjustments accordingly. So I think that the volume of plays that they're going to be able to trust Andy Dalton to run is going to be obviously much larger than that of Justin Fields right off the bat. So figuring out which 60 or 70 plays Dalton can run with extreme confidence, and then he can get up to the line of scrimmage, flip it or check to a run, whatever it is, whatever the front dictates. I think that's going to be just a little bit more crisp with him right now. So I think that keeping things simple, allowing him to read the defense and make an adjustment accordingly, those are the types of things that the Bears are going to need to do to set him up for success.
I have two of the smartest football guys in town talking with me about the Chicago Bears as they start training camp. We're going to take a timeout, but I want both of you to think about this question because it's going to be the first thing we talk about when we come back. How can Matt Nagy be better? We are going to discuss that with Anthony Heron and Dan Durkin next here on The Score.
Lawrence Holmes live from Chicago, middays noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and Odyssey Station.
Coach Flip did a wonderful job this offseason of giving them those homework assignments as to making sure that they're really studying what we did in OTAs, specifically for Justin being able to, as you all know, you've heard me talk about it, is making sure that he can get through a huddle call the right way, get to the line of scrimmage the right way, call the play and make plays. What I can tell you now that we've had 3 days of being together in rookie camp is I was really impressed with the way that Justin came back from OTAs until these last 3 days of in and out of the huddle and seeing things. You could see he did his homework.
Matt Nagy talking about Justin Fields and some of the things that they are looking for. I am talking Bears with Big Ant Heron, who is here with me in studio. Our buddy Dan Durkin is on the phone having a little bit of a Bears roundtable discussion.
Yes, sir.
As camp opens up, before we went to break, I asked you both to ponder this question. How can Matt Nagy be better? Dan, I'm going to start with you. How can the Bears head coach be better at his job?
I think for me, Lawrence, he needs to prove that a question that I've had in my head for years now with him since he's been in Chicago is, can Matt Nagy only teach a scheme he learned, or can he adapt to the people that he has available to maximize what they do best? And so I think that he has no excuses now when it comes to what he has to work with from a talent perspective. While there are still several questions about how all of these pieces come together, I think that he has enough talent to make an offense that should score enough points to allow this team to have a chance, you know, 4 out of 5 games that they play. And so really what it comes down to me is he still stubborn and stuck to wanting to run things in an idealistic fashion, or has he been humbled enough now that he needs to understand, I need to make work what I have, and I need to be more flexible? Because I think you saw some rigidity and you saw some inflexibility his first couple of years to the detriment of his offense. Caught the league by surprise in 28, significant regression at the end of the 2018 season into the 2019 season, and then started to make some adjustments last year, but I think it was a little too little too late situation. So what have you learned from that, and now how can you adapt to what you have to work with?
I think there is legit potential in Matt Nagy as not only a head coach, but as a play caller as well. And you know this, Lawrence, like I've been saying for several seasons now that Matt Nagy has been better as a head coach than he has as a play caller. And that was showcased so dramatically in when Bill Lazor took over the play calling last year. And it's not because Bill Lazor reinvented anything. It's not because Bill Lazor, as he called the plays, put the Bears in these schematic advantages. It was frankly because he just called the offense. He just sequenced the plays in a manner that suited the skill set of his personnel. And that, to me, has been the biggest shortcoming of Matt Nagy as a play caller. As a head coach, I think he's been good as a play caller. Not just the sequencing of plays, which, of course, with any play caller in the NFL, you can find those moments where you're wondering, why did you call that in that scenario? But just on the whole, the deployment of his personnel has been a constant issue within the Bears offense. And that's what I've taken so much issue with when you have a quarterback who is obviously so limited with his ability to process from within the pocket. Why did you consistently put him in those scenarios over and over again? Then Lazor takes over the play calling and suddenly, you know, I look really smart when I wasn't really smart in saying for multiple seasons that you needed to move the pocket more with Mitch, that you need to get him on the move to help the offensive line and the run game and all these other things. It's just one of those things that's a simplistic version of how you rein in the potential for a quarterback to make mistakes mentally. And once the offense went more in that direction, is the ceiling a bit limited versus some of the things we see the Kansas City Chiefs do? Sure. But it wasn't just about the way that it helped Mitch because he didn't have to process as much. It was the way that it aided the offensive line because they weren't protecting a stationary target. And because they were able to be more aggressive by having so many pocket movements, because the launch point adjusts from one snap to the next, takes the starch out of the opposing pass rush, allows a David Montgomery to get rolling because the run game is a more consistent part of the offense. And even something to me where Jimmy Graham became a topic sort of every couple of weeks, there was, you know, these Jimmy Graham flourishes, and then there were points where Jimmy Graham kind of, you know, disappeared for a little while from the offense. And it seemed fairly obvious to me that especially as Cole Kmet began to emerge and he, you know, they seemed more comfortable having him on the field and utilizing him within the offense, there shouldn't be a red zone series where you're running multiple plays in the red zone where Jimmy Graham isn't at least out there as a decoy. And that to me was a huge issue just in not recognizing the potential that gave you, because there were several games where Jimmy Graham in the red zone, you go 3-by-1 and he's one-on-one and just float one up to one of the great, you know, skyscrapers in NFL history as a tight end slash receiver. And they just allowed that to not be a part of the offense for weeks on end. That's deployment of your personnel. That's a problem. Either you throw it to him or you use him as a decoy or just having him in the huddle. Like, he shouldn't be running off the field in the red zone, but he was too frequently last year. I believe Matt Nagy, and at least what I'm hearing throughout this offseason, seems to indicate that he is paying attention to some of the mistakes, some of the errors, some of the shortcomings from his initial seasons here in operating the Bears offense. We'll see what that actually looks like on game days, but he seems like he is attempting to learn those lessons.
This next question, Big Ann, I'm going to start with you. I'm going to take Justin Fields out of it, okay? Who's the player that you're most looking forward to seeing? And it can be a rookie. It can be a year-to-year guy. What you want to see that player come back with. Who's on that list for you?
Darnell Mooney.
Why?
Darnell Mooney. I didn't know a lot about him in college. Then when they drafted him, started watching some film, reached out to some Tulane folks who really thought very highly of him. And from the first game, what was it, Detroit they opened up with last year? And I was talking to you about it. I was talking to Dan about it. And the days after they faced the Lions in last season's opener, where he didn't do a lot statistically, but there's just a way he moves. There was a confidence for a guy, a rookie coming in with no live reps over the offseason, who seemed to have not just the ability to threaten the defense with his speed, but sort of understood nuances to route running and in cuts and out cuts, and could throttle down in a way that defenders couldn't anticipate and be able to separate in a way that we didn't see other Bears pass catchers separating from defenders. So not just with that deep ball speed, but he seemed to have a pretty immediate ability to be effective with the entire route tree in a way that I certainly didn't recognize, you know, from his college film. And I think a lot of scouts may have underestimated as well. And I think with, you know, not to discuss Justin Fields within this topic, but all those deep ball opportunities we saw missed last season to Mooney and at times to others by frequent Bears quarterbacks, multiple Bears quarterbacks, at whatever point Fields is in the lineup, he's the most accurate deep ball thrower we've seen probably in recent college football vintage, then that should allow what we saw develop from Darnell Mooney, where he became a short and intermediate sort of chain mover. It wasn't about the deep speed. They just had to find a way to give him the ball. And in a San Francisco 49ers kind of way, they allowed that to sort of operate within the offense. This season, hopefully we will see the full scope of Darnell Mooney's skill set, because I believe it's vast.
Dan, what about you? Well, who's the player, non-Justin Fields player, that you're most looking forward to seeing?
So there were four that came to mind when you asked. Big Ant picked one of them. I'd say for me, I'm going to chip away at the two, but then talk about the one. So two guys that came to mind other than what I'm going to say. Jalen Johnson and Sam Mustafa. But the person that I really am going to focus in a lot is Tevin Jenkins, the Bears second-round draft pick. It's a guy I loved coming out of Oklahoma State. But I'm wondering if the Bears are potentially not setting him up right off the bat by putting him on the left side. Yeah. So I have a big question about that, just because I think when I was assessing him, day one starter on the right-hand side, give you some time to adjust to the speed, but be a mauler, be a right-handed running team, because you know you can get yardage behind him. Now you're asking him to move to the left, play on an island, deal with long arc pass rushes. I think he might struggle with that. And so I wonder if he's going to be able to recover, or if he's going to get down on himself mentally. So I think that the amount of pressure they've put on him by saying, hey, you're our left tackle now, I would have approached it of, you're our right tackle now, we're going to go sign a Russell Okung or something like that to hold us over for a year, and then we're going to transition this over. So he, to me, is so crucial for that offensive line, because if you start to see heat coming from the backside of the quarterback, that changes how you deploy. So now all of a sudden you're keeping in a back to chip or a tight end to his side. So now you have four out in a route, or in some instances, three out in a route. So I think how he performs on the left-hand side has a really big cascade for the rest of the offense.
And it's part of why I was surprised they pretty much immediately let Charles Leno walk, not because Charles Leno was outstanding, but there's really no other coverage there. There's no depth at tackle still within the Bears offense. And I do wonder, it really goes to the previous question you asked about where Matt Nagy needs to improve, because we saw a better version of Charles Leno when the offense was called in a manner that took pressure off of him as a pass protector. And then, you know, because a lot of the penalties Leno picked up weren't only in like drop back pass opportunities, but when it just sort of erodes your confidence and your aggression, then you're more frequently going to like jump off sides or false start or have mental errors that we saw really both tackles at times pick up for the Bears. And so I think if Tevin Jenkins is going to be asked to block in the way that Matt Nagy has most called this Bears offense, then he is likely to struggle early in his career as a left tackle. If we see sort of the December 2020 version of the Bears offense, where he, even as a left tackle, can be called upon to maul, and there's so much balance to the play calling, and the launch point moves frequently, then that's why you don't necessarily hear about a bunch of issues with San Francisco's offensive line, or with Buffalo's offensive line, or with Baltimore's offensive line, really regardless of personnel, because their play callers scheme in a way where there's pressure taken off of the guys up front. They can be in an aggressive temperament in a majority of the plays, whether run or pass, and then there's less aggression in the way the defense can attack them, because those dropback passing scenarios are more infrequent, more unpredictable, and so you won't see Tevin Jenkins on an island as frequently. So I'm hoping that their willingness to just say, hey, college right tackle with all the talent in the world, come over here to left tackle from day one, and we're not even going to have like a veteran backup available for you, then I'm hoping that all that infrastructure that should be a part of that puzzle is the way the Bears are piecing it together, and that we see that implemented on game day with the play calling. Not just about what play might score us a touchdown, but what play gives everyone the comfort and the opportunity at success.
Dan, when you consider how much we're seeing teams being in 11 personnel, and we're talking 70% of the time now we're seeing teams in 11 personnel, should I be concerned about the lack of knowledge of the corner slash slot guy on the Bears defense?
It's a big concern. It was a concern last year with Buster Screen. It was a concern last year with Duke Shelley. So it's like, who is stepping in here now? So, you know, it's funny that you're scratching upon, like, when I think about top of the sort, like, questions for me about the Bears, positions of concern. They have positions of concern that are premier positions. We just touched upon one at left tackle. Well, now we're getting into the cornerback, which is very high on my list as well. So I think you should be concerned, because what did you see the Packers do last year? Hey, find Buster Screen. We're going to put Devontae on him. We're going to throw the ball to him 15 times. What did they do the second time? Hey, find Duke Shelley. We're going to put Devontae on him. We're going to throw the ball to him 12 times. So I think that once teams are able to isolate, the toughest spot about playing in that slot cornerback position is you're giving up a two-way go on every snap, meaning a guy can cut in or he can cut out just because of where they're located on the field. It is a very demanding position. And then you pile on top of that, you're closer to the end man of the line of scrimmage, so you're asked to be a part of the run support as well. You could be playing force on some plays. And so, to me, the slot corner position is a big, big area of concern, as are some of the outside cornerback positions. That's why I mentioned Jalen Johnson as well in there. So I think, to me, you've struck a nerve there in terms of, if we're concerned and we're putting, you know, bullseyes on certain positions on the board that you say might be a little deficient there, slot cornerback is definitely near the top of the list.
I'm hoping that Thomas Graham at some point, because I called a few of his games in college, and my hope is that we'll see a version of him that meets his full potential for the Bears, because I think there's a lot of game there that we'll have the opportunity to be realized. And overall, if the Bears defensive front turns into what the financial investment in it would indicate, and what we've seen the peak of some of these guys' careers, who they're not fully, you know, age-wise out of their prime yet. You know, hopefully Robert Quinn doesn't have a flat tire this season. I've not talked to you several times last year, not just about rumors, but about what the film indicated about being able to get to that apex of the rush angle, but not quite able to turn the corner, to plant that foot and keep those cleats in the ground, to really get there, to burst and finish. Hopefully if those things come to fruition and you get a Mac that you hope to get, you get, you know, Quinn that you hope to get, you know, you get everything that you can out of Akeem Hicks, then all the concerns on the back end can be greatly diminished, because this ferocious front four, front five, front seven in certain scenarios, depending on, you know, how much you get from the blitz package, then, you know, everything on the back end can kind of take care of itself, because quarterbacks are thrown off their back foot.
Okay, so this is a pointed question. I'm saying that before I ask it. Who's the best player, Big Ant, on the Bears defense? Because I have a name in mind.
Going into the, like, I don't know. I mean, historically, it's obviously Khalil Mack.
Right. That's not the name that I had in mind.
No, I mean, Roquan Smith is the guy who performed best last year, man. Roquan is a beast. He is an animal out on the field, and he has ascended every year that he has been with this ball club, and he's been out there. You know, I mean, I guess aside from, earlier in his career within those first two seasons, but last year he showed up every game, performed at a Pro Bowl level. Should have been, amongst that crew last year. So as of just the productivity at this point in their career coming off of last season, I'll phrase it this way. The best player on the Bears defense last season was Roquan Smith. If he's the best player on the Bears defense this season, it's probably not a championship defense.
Do you concur, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, I still think Khalil is the best overall player in terms of ascending. Yes, it's by far Roquan. And I mean, what he enables a defensive coordinator to do, and you saw this a lot with Vic, you know, it goes back to Vic's time with the San Francisco 49ers when they had Navarro Bowman and Patrick Willis. If you can trust your front six to stop the run, it allows you to do so much with the back five of your defense in terms of how you show maybe too high and rotate to one, rotate to two. It changes so much when you can trust that front six to make plays against the run. But the versatility aspect that Roquan gives you is he can flip his hips and follow somebody in coverage as well. So last year, to me, Roquan was just exceptional. He looked like the player you thought that they were drafting when they took him at number 8 overall. So do agree that in terms of ascension, it's by far Roquan. But when you go back and look at Khalil, and you know what Khalil was dealing with now physically last year, he was still an exceptional player, and I anticipate him being the best player. And to Anthony's point, if he's not the best player on the defense this year, it's going to be a problem, because I think if you aren't able to mask some of what I think are potential deficiencies in the back seven of that defense with a good pass rush, with more twists, I don't even think they need to send a lot of pressure. What I liked about Vic was twists and stunts up front, just to really put the offensive line in conflict about who do you have on this play, and then maybe from there you give the linebacker the ability to read. My running back's in on protection. I'm a green dog. I'm going on this one. So you're not really exposing the back half to supplement the front. I think that Roquan really enables a defensive coordinator to be very flexible, simply because he is a true two-way player on defense.
And that's where Sean Desai excites me this season. You know, partially hearkening back to what Vic did early in Roquan's career, but just also what kind of a young set of eyes can be. And he's been with these guys the entire step of their time with the Bears. And so whatever new ideas, whatever fresh version of the Bears defense he brings to the table, you would imagine, because Roquan is so versatile, you know, so kind of Keekly-esque in the ability to go sideline to sideline, the ability to read things, he's gotten so much better in the box, reacting to the run downhill, taking on blocks, you know, knocking people out. Sure, when the hole is gaping, there's going to be the occasional missed tackle, but it's because he reads things so quickly and gets there, but also, like Dan said, in pass coverage. And the biggest thing to me that separates he and Danny Trevathan, Danny's an okay blitzer. Roquan is a ferocious blitzer. Roquan is a game-changing blitzer, whether it's coming free, whether it's he's blocked and he needs to defeat a block. He's just got such a great feel for blitzing, either in the A-gaps or even you'll see them in packages rushing him off the edge, and he's got to defeat sometimes an offensive tackle turning the corner. He can do everything you would want a great linebacker to be able to do from the second level and up front within your defense. And so I'm just really curious to see how Sean Desai deploys the talents of Roquan Smith and the versatility that he can provide for the Bears defense.
Gentlemen, this was tremendous. I'm so happy that you both were available to kind of kick off training camp for the Bears. I'm looking forward to talking with you both throughout the preseason and the regular season. Dan, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate you jumping on, man.
Thanks for having me, guys. Be well.
Ready, Pride.
We will do our... That's right. Y'all are just up in here, man. Bolingbrook is just up in here today.
We in the building, son. Jim.
Big Ann, I appreciate you coming in, and I'm looking forward to talking more ball with you throughout the year. It's great to see you, man. Truly. Truly great to see you.
Great to be seen, my friend.
We are going to take a break. When we come back, I was at Wrigley last night. It was interesting. And I got a few minutes with Rossi. I'll tell you about it next here on The Score.
Lawrence Holmes live from Chicago, middays noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and Odyssey Station.
Yesterday after the show, I left here and went right over to Wrigley Field. And it was good. I hadn't gone to cover a game in a while. And I was like, I'm going to go cover pregame. And I thank the Cubs for letting me know what the protocols were and kind of helping me out on all of this. And I got an opportunity to talk to some people, find out a little bit more what's going on. One of the things that I missed about not being able to go cover things because of COVID is the things that you can learn by just being quiet. I spend a lot of time talking, so when it comes to going out to the ballparks, I usually try to listen, and a lot of great questions were being asked by the Cubs beat, and seeing Rossi respond in real time, like in person, was fun. And then I got a chance to talk with Rossi, and he enjoys doing the show, or at least that's what he said to my face, that he enjoys doing the show, and I'm glad that he and I got a chance to talk, because that's what I would do. I would go probably once every couple of weeks to go talk to Joe just about the game, and for him to get to know me and for me to get to know him. So I told Rossi that he'll see me more. Like, it's going to be weird, but as long as we're allowed to go out there, he'll see me more as the year goes on. It's a weird vibe over there, because I think there are a lot of people that just want to get to the next thing. And that this living in limbo that's gone on for the last 3 weeks has been hard on everyone. There should be some clarification over the next couple of days, but even that's going to be difficult. I think everyone over there has handled it with a lot of maturity, and I'm curious to see what happens next. I'll talk with Parkins and Spiegel coming up next here on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.